good morning and welcome. You are tuned into 2SER 107.3. It's 10 a.m. on Saturday morning, which means it is time for Final Draft. Every week, books, writing and literary culture, and we've got them all today. It's the last Saturday of the month. It means it's time for our Australian Classics Book Club. And today I'm going to be discussing Christina Stead's The Little Hotel. Now, Christina Stead is regarded as possibly one of the finest Australian writers, and The Little Hotel is an amazing work of satire set in the Hotel Swiss Touring in Geneva in the post-war period. This is hilarious. I loved this book, but it's dark. It has so much to say about our world. Now, I'm going to be joined, as always, by David Winter. He is a senior editor at Text Publishing, and his insights are invaluable to understanding the importance of this book. I'm also joined by Lisa Gorton. She's a poet and a novelist, and extremely passionate, perhaps even an evangelist, of Christina Stead's The Little Hotel. That's what's coming up on the show today. Before we get to that conversation, I just want to ask you a little bit about why you love Final Draft, why you love 2SER, because we are getting towards our supporter drive. Once a year, we ask you to support 2SER and be a part of the family that makes this radio station happen. If you could go to 2ser.com/donate, for as little as a dollar a day or even a dollar a week, you can help us put great radio on the air. Any amount helps. Go to 2ser.com/donate and be a part of the 2SER family, bringing great radio stories, ideas and music to the airwaves every single day. I really appreciate it. Don't forget to mention that you love Final Draft when you donate. You are, of course, on Final Draft. This is 2SER, and we're going to be talking Christina Stead's Little Hotel in the Australian Classics Book Club. It's up after this short break.
The Loft Bar at UTS on Broadway opens from 2 until late every weekday, making it the perfect spot for an early finish or relaxing after work. With craft beer, seasonal draft specials and cocktails on tap, come and unwind in the Loft's shady courtyard, soundtracked each evening by local acoustic musicians. The Loft Bar at UTS on Broadway is your inner city oasis in the heart of Ultimo. 2SER sponsors.
There's never a dull moment in American politics.
You know that. I know that. Everybody knows that.
Join Professor Ed Blakely and myself, Sean Britton, as we dissect all the goings-on in Washington and from sea to shining sea in US of Ed.
So here's a man in critical crisis. This is a guy who wears the title president, but is not a president.
US of Ed is proudly made in the studios of 2SER. Subscribe on iTunes, Wooshka, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. You're listening to Final Draft, and if you're checking the date, it is the last Saturday of the month, and that means it is time for the Australian Classics Book Club. And today in the book club, we are discussing the incomparable Christina Stead and her 1973 novel, The Little Hotel. The Little Hotel is a vibrant and darkly comic look at the staff and inhabitants of the Hotel Swiss Touring in Geneva, set over an off-season shortly after the Second World War. Now, joining me in the book club, it's my regular book club colleague, David Winter. I was choking over that, David. I'm excited. I haven't spoken to you for a little while. Now, David's a senior editor at Text Publishing. They bring us the Text Classics. Welcome, David.
Thank you. Great to be back.
And I'm also joined today by Lisa Gorton. Lisa is a poet, essayist and novelist. Her work has won her a swag of awards, including her most recent novel, The Life of Houses, which took out the Prime Minister's Award for Fiction. Lisa has written the introduction for the Text Classics edition of The Little Hotel. Lisa, welcome to the book club.
Thank you, Andrew.
I'm excited to be talking about The Little Hotel. I had so much fun reading this. Sometimes I didn't feel like I should be having fun, but it's so humorous. But before we get into the book, David, can you give us some background on Christina Stead and where The Little Hotel fits into her body of work?
Sure. Well, Christina Stead was born in the southern suburbs of Sydney in 1902. She went to Teachers College on a scholarship and then saved her money from teaching and secretarial work, and she left for London when she was in her mid-20s. She didn't return permanently to Australia for almost half a century. In London, she very quickly fell in love with William Blake, who was a married American broker. He was a fellow Marxist and a fellow novelist. They worked at the same bank. They soon moved to Paris before travelling around Europe, then living for a time in America before moving back to England. They eventually married in 1952. In the mid-1930s, her debut novel was published, that's Seven Poor Men of Sydney, and also a short story collection, The Salzburg Tales. And there was significant critical acclaim in the UK and the US for these books. And she very swiftly followed them up with novels that drew on her time in Paris, The Beauties and Furies, and House of All Nations. But it was in the 1940s that she produced her major novels. Among them were the autobiographical The Man Who Loved Children and For Love Alone, as well as Letty Fox, Her Luck. She took on screenwriting work for Hollywood, but by the 1950s, Stead and Blake were in significant financial trouble, and Stead's book sales were terrible. She didn't publish another book for almost 15 years. The American republication in the mid-1960s of The Man Who Loved Children and For Love Alone renewed interest in her writing, and it seemed to spur her on, because over the subsequent decade, she published four new works. The Little Hotel, which we're discussing today, was published in 1973, and that roughly coincides with Stead returning to Australia after her husband's death. She lived for another decade in Australia in pretty difficult circumstances owing to her financial situation. In the 1980s, after Stead's death, Virago Classics republished most of her novels, and there was a sort of resurgence in interest instead, but it was really this century, particularly about 2010, when Jonathan Franzen called The Man Who Loved Children a masterpiece, that Christina Stead really felt like she was getting proper recognition for her work. I think it's fair to say that she's a towering figure in Australian literature. She's among the most important 20th century writers in English, but she's difficult to approach. Her dozen novels have strongly modernist elements. They can seem very old-fashioned to contemporary readers. They can seem forbiddingly dense and even a bit too baggy. In Australia, she didn't have the public profile of Patrick White. She spent, of course, most of her life abroad and set much of her work abroad too. So The Man Who Loved Children draws on her Sydney childhood, but she actually transposed it to America, the setting to America for the novel. And unlike someone like Randolph Stowe, she doesn't have an easy, accessible, much-loved book like The Merry-Go-Round in the Sea, which would sort of bring readers to her more difficult work. But having said all that, I think The Little Hotel is a really neat entry point into the world of Christina Stead.
As you were saying that, and especially when you mentioned that she can be maybe more difficult for people to approach, I thought The Little Hotel, this is such a perfect way. I think maybe we can make that our job today, because I loved this book. My very first impression of The Little Hotel, it was so visual to me, and particularly some screen hotels, sort of a faulty Towers of the UN. I had a slightly racist Wes Anderson film going in my head through some scenes. Lisa, you touch on the genre of the hotel novel in your introduction, and the hotel setting is certainly rich with possibility for humour as well as horror and tragedy. And I wonder about that confluence of humanity that teem within those hotel walls. Can we start by discussing what makes hotels and the Hotel Swiss Touring, the setting of The Little Hotel, such a rich setting?
It's a very unusual book in Christina Stead's body of work, and I'm so pleased to be discussing it because I think it's scandalously overlooked. I think it's such an exciting book to read, and it's so funny and dark. I think that it's also concise, and I think that the hotel gives a kind of shape to the novel, whereas some other novels she has are really structured around someone's voice, some fabulous talker's voice. Here the fabulous talker is the owner of a hotel, and she narrates most of the book. But what she does is put characters onto the hotel as you might put characters onto a stage, and then describes how they interact. And there are the guests of the hotel, and then there are the staff of the hotel. So it is, as you say, a kind of upstairs, downstairs, but with the darkest sort of satire. Stead had this book with her for a very long time. She first wrote it when they had been really forced to leave America under McCarthy, and they ended up wandering around Europe, staying in little hotels. And she describes that somewhere in a letter as the wandering, haunted, hunted life beginning again, or some phrase like that. And she kept this book and developed this book really out of diaries. And while she was working on it then, she called it by the name of two of the characters in the book, Mrs. Trollope and Madame Blaise. And she couldn't get the book published. And she sent it to a friend, Oliver Stalabras, as a Valentine's Day gift, a joke because it's so dark. He gave it the name, I think, The Little Hotel, with her consent. And I think when he did that, he was thinking of that film, The Grand Hotel. And he was making a kind of joke with that. Because if that hotel, which was grand and a study of modern life and its sort of existential homelessness, for Christina Stead, that exists in the novel in its sense of ritual structure and time, but she's also looking at it, I think, from a Marxist point of view, and she's looking at the economic transactions that structure the relationships between all these people, whether they're guests and staff or whether they're married couples or whether they're cousins, lovers who are pretending to be cousins. There are all these sort of... The hotel is a stage for modernism for her in this novel, but it's also a way for her to analyse capitalism and economic exchange in emotional terms.
Having the hotel proprietor as our narrator, Madame Bonnard, hopefully my pronunciation is adequate there, does a really interesting thing, though. It's almost like Madame Bonnard occupies this liminal zone between the staff and the patrons. And I was really curious about the narratorial perspective a few times because Madame Bonnard knows things she couldn't possibly know. And it felt a few times like the voice was switching. And then something really interesting, a detail that I had to think back on, where she talks about how she and her husband occasionally sneak into the rooms if it's absolutely necessary. And in my mind, it suddenly switched over that, of course, she knows things she shouldn't know or couldn't possibly know unless she was a fly on the wall, because she is, in a way, the body of the hotel. It's almost like her ears, her eyes are in all the walls.
That's such an interesting perspective. And her it's post-war, and it's looking at the guests of the hotel have washed up. They're sort of collaborators and people who've made a profit one way or another.
It's such an interesting cast of characters too, and having Madame Bonnard sort of reflect, it's a very dry reflection, but it ends up being so incredibly funny. People, they come and go in scenes, meet in hallways, are observed from afar. What is everyone's overall impression? I found it very slapstick, and then it started to go almost a little tragicomic, and there are moments that are just pure tragedy, and I became very... I'll talk about this more, but it became very sad at the fates of these characters.
Yeah, I think there's a sort of superficial resemblance to Farce here. You know, all these quirky characters thrown together in a small fourth-rate hotel and their interactions with the all-seeing, all-knowing narrator who's the hotel keeper. But I think Stead uses that very cleverly, because while there is... on most pages, there's some really good dark humour, brilliant dark humour. It never descends into farce. It always feels like she's using a form to much greater ends, and that's what Lisa was alluding to when she was talking about the analysis of capital and so on. You kind of have this beautiful superstructure of dinner meal times and arguments over menus and the pettiness of these people, and yet much darker, deeper undercurrents, relationship breakdowns, people who aren't really who they say they are, lost money, fragmented countries and so on.
First Person is leading literary talent Richard Flanagan's first novel since his 2013 Man Booker Prize winning The Narrow Road to the Deep North. On October 4, Flanagan sits down with award-winning author Michael Robotham to discuss this much-anticipated new novel. Don't miss Flanagan and Robotham on Wednesday, October 4 at City Recital Hall. Tickets now on sale at swf.org.au. 2SER sponsor.
In the House Cult Film Classics returns to Event Cinemas George Street, October 13th. You'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll hurl. There's only one world and one party in Wayne's World.
No Stairway. Denied.
Hosted by Seventh, Jabba and Quinny from Supernova. Check the full In the House program and grab tickets at eventcinemas.com.au. Event Cinemas George Street, sponsors of 2SER 107.3.
You are on 2SER 107.3. You're listening to Final Draft, and you're in the Australian Classics Book Club. I'm joined by David Winter and Lisa Gorton, and we are discussing Christina Stead's The Little Hotel. It is a fantastic satire and social commentary set in the Hotel Swiss Touring in Geneva, just after the Second World War. The novel contains an amazing ensemble cast and is so incredibly character-driven and dialogue-driven in its exploration of themes and social commentary of the time. Two characters really stick out in my mind when we think about an analysis of the financial system and then also deeper, sort of social criticism, and that is Mr. Wilkins and Mrs. Trollope. They are masquerading rather unsuccessfully as cousins and have been doing so for a number of years. We're drip-fed this throughout the course of the novel, but I don't think it's too much of a spoiler to discuss this. We have them in separate rooms adjacent to each other. They're telling everyone they're cousins, but everyone sort of sees that they're a little bit closer than that. And we find out that Mr. Wilkins is very much controlling Mrs. Trollope in a way, and it has a lot to do with the exchange rates that I can only pretend to understand what was going on with the exchange rates in that post-war period. But how did can I get some thoughts on that relationship and the satire but also the commentary that was going on through there?
I think that the heart of the novel is Mrs. Trollope, who is bewildered and generous and lost, and who knows that she needs to make a decision to stay with her partner, who keeps pretending that he's her cousin and won't acknowledge her, and also the decision to go back to her children, who aren't that interested in her. One of the really artful ways in which Stead handles this novel is that that's at the heart of it, I think, that decision about her future. But it's handled with a great deal of sort of, I don't know, indirection in a way, so that as a reader you're like a guest in a hotel and you're seeing things as a guest in the hotel would see them and having to work them out. There are all kinds of major occurrences in the hotel that you never really know much about. There might have been a murder, there might have been another murder. You're there like a kind of sleuth and a reader and also a guest. Christina Stead at this time was very interested in puppets. And she was interested in them in a really beautiful way. So I was listening to you talk about farce and I suppose aesthetic beauty. And there's that really interesting sense of puppetry in this novel. Who's holding the strings? Who's pulling the strings? And so that the narrator of the novel in many ways seems to be pulling all the strings because she knows so much. And so that the question of whether Mrs. Trollope will escape or not becomes a question of sort of personal freedom in a strange way.
Yeah, and poor Mrs. Trollope, who is really at the mercy of an individual and yet talks incessantly about how it's really her country or her lost country of England that's the problem when her problems are really so close to home, or rather close to the hotel. They're right before her with Mr. Wilkins. But she has this great line on about sort of two-thirds of the book where she says to a group of the assembled guests, "Oh, I wonder where we'll all be next year. We don't have a home anymore, do we? In the old days, you were at least safe in your own country. Now the Russians and their friends are everywhere." And on she goes. So she's always framing things in a sort of geopolitical sense, and she's obsessed with class, but really the financial purse strings are being pulled by her partner, who doesn't even acknowledge her as such.
So. That obsession with class was so fascinating. And David, you've touched there on the sort of the dinner party scene where class plays out in the most unusual way. I mean, I think we're very used to, particularly if any of the listeners are particular fans of period TV drama, if you have that, again, we've touched on Upstairs, Downstairs, we have a sense of where class sits. But in that dinner party scene, we have different classes from different countries who view each other's country as sitting in another kind of parallel class system, where Mr. Wilkins and Mrs. Trollope very much feel their position, but then the Blazers feel theirs, and there's some really interesting childish hilarious tit for tat that they play out. The scene later on where there's a snubbed lunch appointment, and the way they observe each other. Lisa, you touched on the idea of puppetry, and it feels like everyone believes themselves the puppeteer, but then also doesn't feel that their own strings are being pulled. And that's where I found so much humour, this misunderstanding of what was going on.
I think that's right. I think we're speaking about the darkness of the novel, but you're right to bring us back to the humour of it. It's so funny. There are crazy scenes that are also very beautiful. For instance, at that dinner party, there's a princess who's taught her dog Angel to sing Do You Ken John Peel? But of course, and she's trying to sell the dog, of course. But to the other guests, it just sounds like the dog is howling. But that dog howls at the dinner. There's a crazy, really magnificent character called the Major who is full of wordplay and kind of anarchic humour, and he's always distributing champagne and so he's very popular, but he ends up wandering into a posh hotel quite naked except for a muffler. And this brings out how for her class is really observed as though it were the behaviour of strange animals. He comes into the hotel and he's all naked except for his muffler and a plastic bag full of stuff. And they don't want him in this posh hotel, but they can't find a way to say no. And so someone follows him up the stairs shouting out, but sir, you have no luggage. I mean, it's carried off so that it's flamboyant and very, very funny, but also an analysis, I suppose, of human manners and how strange they are to Christina Sturt.
She enjoyed a bit of the nudity too. There was another scene where he's locked in the bathroom, and as he emerges, Charlie, who works in the hotel, observes that, see, he was wearing his glasses, which I think that was all that he had taken into the bathroom with him. Lisa, you've reminded me of Angel, who is the singing dog. And a recurring theme for the Princess with Angel is that she can't sell him because she can't find his papers to establish the pedigree, which seems to reflect so much on all of these characters. They're trying so desperately to establish their pedigree to each other, but nobody seems to have the right paperwork.
Yeah,
I think that's right. And in the diaries that Christina Sturt kept when she was living in Switzerland just after the war, she was hearing the stories of servants in the hotel who were working for almost nothing or for really nothing because they didn't have the right papers. For her, this was a pressing... she realised that this was a pressing concern, and she's dramatised that, I think, in the novel.
Can we see Christina Sturt in the novel? There were a few things that... ticked over for me as I read, and then when I read your introduction as well, Lisa, biographically... Christina and her husband spent a lot of time wandering as partners before they married, which seems to echo somewhat Mr. Wilkins and Mrs. Trollope's situation. There, obviously, you mentioned off air, Lisa, that much of her diaries and including characters are reflected in the novel. And then there is a moment in the dinner party scene where it's actually Dr. Blaze, who I wouldn't have picked to be the person to put my voice into, but he... he makes a speech on the parlous quality of human nature, and he says, I'm a satirist of human nature, of which I have the worst opinion. Aristocracy takes its position by force. There is no quality of any kind in human nature. Human nature is invariably pleased by the feats of thieves, torturers, liars, more than by other qualities. And frankly, I think the muckrakers and iconoclasts are absurd. Can I hear Christina Sturt's voice itself in that, or is she really taking a moment here just to let loose?
I'm not sure. He's such a nasty character. I mean, he's
you wouldn't pick him, would you?
Addicted to drugs, and he may well murder her in the end. I don't think that's a spoiler because it's really unclear what happens. And he also at the dinner is passing round photographs of grotesque injuries and suffering. So I think in a way, I think this is the novel that is most artful. In which she's controlling all the nuances of what she's doing. And I think that people move in, we empathise with something they say, and then we're sort of jolted out of that. I personally think that he's a kind of dark reflection of the sort of heroic doctor character in Grand Hotel, who is addicted to morphine himself and is a war hero, injured. He's a kind of satirist and commentator on humanity as it passes by him in the hotel. And I think she's made a sort of dark reverse image of him in her hotel, a commentator who profits from other people's suffering while speaking high-mindedly of human darkness.
I keep coming back to things that I connected with when I was reading, and I wondered whether I would feel... I do a little bit feel like I want a sequel. I'm obviously not getting a sequel, but it's like the way I felt when I got to the last episode of Fawlty Towers as a child. And you mean there's no more wonderful hotel antics that, as an adult, I realised were not quite as wonderful and a lot darker. It's so visual and so filmic. And
I agree. I think it ought to be a film. And I agree that it has that combination of feeling that you get from watching Fawlty Towers. I find it very stressful to watch Fawlty Towers. And yet compelling, because everything is taken to a kind of extreme. I actually am so pleased to be talking about this novel because I discovered it in a secondhand bookstore, and I couldn't come across anyone who'd read it, actually. But I still think it's really one of the strangest and most memorable Australian books I've ever read, and I find it really shocking that it was overlooked for so long, actually.
And
well done, Text Classics.
Well, oddly enough, it's the one Stead book that was published first in Australia by Angus and Robertson.
And you've hit, Lisa, there on a very important theme that we are talking about Australian classics, and The Little Hotel clearly stands up to that. Despite the fact we are in Geneva, Christina Stead, as an amazing, incomparable Australian writer, has really hit on something of the human condition. And again, I would say, again, bravo to Text Classics. You've given us something, or you've rediscovered something for us that everyone should read. And we started the conversation talking about how to get into Christina Stead. I hope for the listener that we've given you The Little Hotel and encouraged you to start there and really get into her work. You are listening to Final Draft. You're on 2SER 107.3, and this is the Australian Classics Book Club. My guests today have been Lisa Gorton. Lisa wrote the introduction to the Text Classics edition. She is a poet. She is an essayist. She's a novelist. And you have my great debt, Lisa, for joining us. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And also, as always, David Winter. He's a senior editor at Text. And you have heard his voice in the book club, and you will hear it again. David, thank you, as always.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Stories, ideas, music. 2SER 107.3.
This is Final Draft, books, writing and literary culture on 2SER 107.3. I'm Andrew Popel. You have been listening to the Australian Classics Book Club. This month we were approaching Christina Stead's The Little Hotel. And once a month, the last Saturday of every month, you can rediscover a classic of Australian writing. There are some fantastic classics across the year. I would encourage you to get to 2SER.com and find another amazing Australian read. Now, before we go, I want to say thank you again. I want to say a huge thank you to David Winter. He's a senior editor at Text, and he joins me almost every month to discuss classic Australian writing. Lisa Gorton, she's a poet and a novelist. She wrote the introduction for Christina Stead's The Little Hotel. Thank you so much again, Lisa. If you want to hear that conversation again, if you want to catch just a little bit more, because there's so much more to the conversation, I'd go to 2SER.com and listen back. The Vulture's Nest is coming up next. Stay tuned for those guys. They have an amazing take on the week in news and pop culture. But before I let you go, I want to ask just again, we're about to have our supporter drive. And as a listener, you guys, you're so important to what it means to be 2SER. We wouldn't be making this radio if it wasn't for you, and we'd like to ask you to be a part of the station by donating. Your money helps us stay on air. It buys headphones, sound panels, it helps us run the website, it helps us, we pay for the electricity. And in Supporter Drive, we ask you to donate, but you don't have to wait. Go to 2SER.com/donate, and you can give a little bit to help us keep making great radio, great independent journalism. You can do it right now. Don't forget to click on Final Draft so that they know you love books. My name's Andrew Popel. You are listening to 2SER 107.3. Final Draft is going to be back next week for Supporter Drive. I'll see you then. Bye for now.